Wanishi Sakima Adkins. Many, many years ago, white buffalo woman came to the Lakota people, or the Sioux people in the plains, and she taught them many things. She gave them a sacred pipe, and she told them that with this pipe, you will be bound to all your relatives, your grandfather and father, your grandmother and mother. And she gave them a round rock, which was made of the same red stone as the bowl of the pipe. And she said that your father, Wakantanka, has also given that to you. It is the earth, your grandmother and mother, and it is where you will live and increase. This earth, which he has given to you, is red, and the two-leggeds who live upon the earth are red. And Wakantanka, the Great Spirit, has also given you a red day and a red road of goodness. All of this is sacred, and so do not forget. Every dawn as it comes is a holy event, and every day is holy, for the light comes from your father, Wakantanka, and also you must always remember that the two-leggeds and all the other peoples who stand upon this earth are sacred and should be treated as such. Now today I'm going to talk about Native American religion and philosophy and how it relates to us today as we try to survive in a world that is not always a happy place in which to live. Now the Indian people had in the old days and still do many different kinds of places where they worship the Creator. One of those places is called a sweat lodge. A sweat lodge is a church that can be built for no money, but it has an important meaning. Black Elk, a Lakota Wichashawakan, or holy man, said some years ago, when we use the water in the sweat lodge, we should always think of Wakantanka, the Great Spirit, who is always flowing, giving his power and life to everything. The willows, which make the frame of the sweat lodge, are set up in such a way that they mark the four quarters of the universe. And so the whole lodge is the universe in image. And the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, and the winged peoples, and all the things of the world are contained inside it. And all these peoples and things, too, must be purified before they can send a voice to Wakantanka. The round fireplace at the center of the sweat lodge is the center of the universe, in which dwells Wakantanka with his power, which is the fire. All these things are holy and must be understood deeply if we really wish to purify ourselves. For the power of a thing or an act is in the meaning and the understanding. And I want to pause to underline what Black Elk said, that the power of anything is in the meaning and the understanding. There are a lot of people today who think that they can do things that are supposed to be holy or that are supposed to be spiritual, but if they do them for the wrong reasons, they have no power. There are people who put on Indian costumes, but who do not live according to the traditional spiritual values, and such a costume does not mean anything. There are people who want to be chiefs who don't understand what a chief is supposed to be like, and their being a chief does not mean anything. There are people who go to church every Sunday and think that they're very pious, but unless they live 24 hours a day in the right way, their going to church has no meaning at all. So anything we do, and everything we do, no matter what it is, has no power unless we know and live and understand that meaning. I want to tell you a couple of ideas that are really kind of basic to the way Indian people think. And I'm going to do this, for the most part, by giving you the words of old Indian people, our elders, our old philosophers, our teachers, our college professors. I see it's very hard for an Indian these days to be a college professor. There are almost none, because the universities and colleges today, they don't want to hire Indian people with their traditional knowledge. They say you have to have a piece of paper before you can know anything. But our old Indian elders, they had their own universities, which were universities where people really had to learn, because they had to live what they learned. They didn't learn just to talk. They learned how to live what they talked and what they thought. And that's a big difference that we have to keep in mind, because talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. It's how you live that is important. So I'm going to go to the words of the old Indian elders, some of whom lived a long time ago. Our brothers, our close relatives of the Powhatan people, the Delawares, the Lenape, and we Powhatans are Renape in our own language, Renape. The Delawares were Lenape. A Lenape holy man by the name of Witapanokwe was introducing a ceremony in the big house or church, and this is what he said. He said, "Truly, we are thankful that we have lived long enough to see the time come when these, our grandfathers, the trees, bloom forth, and also the coming up of vegetation. Now as well for this water and for him, our grandfather, fire, and again this air, again this sunlight. When everyone has been blessed with such gifts, it is enough to make one realize what kind of benevolence comes from our Father, because he it is who has created everything. It is said traditionally, when anyone meditates on good in his heart, there is formed the thought. And when he thinks of good, it is easy to behave well. But when he misbehaves, it is the evil that a person seriously thinks about as concerns his life." Now you will see several things there in those words. One, which I'll talk about later, is that Indian people feel that the trees and the plants and all of these gifts of our Father, our Grandfather, the Great Spirit, all of these things are our relatives, our brothers and sisters. They are not things that we can just use as we please. They're not things that we can just rip down as we want to. They have their rights to live, and they are our relatives and our kin. But even more than that, as Witapanokwe says, All goodness begins in the heart. It begins in the mind. It begins by thinking good. And we have to keep that in mind in this day and age when so many Indian people are tempted to become false, to become rip-offs, to become hustlers, to become promoters, and to try to make money and get power and recognition and other kinds of things. That kind of thing will not yield any goodness because it does not begin with goodness. One of the great holy men who lives today is Pete Catches. Pete Catches is an old Sioux or Lakota medicine man who lives in South Dakota. And he still lives the old Indian way. And he tells us, I want to exist apart from the modern world. Get out, way out in the sticks, and live much closer to nature even than I'm doing now. I don't even want to be called a medicine man, just a healing man, because this is what I'm made for. I don't ask for anything. A white doctor has a fee. A priest has a fee. I have no fee. A man goes away from me healed, and that is my reward. The Great Spirit made the flowers, the streams, the pines, the cedars, and takes care of them. He takes care of me, waters me, feeds me, makes me live with the plants and animals as one of them. And this is how I wish to remain, an Indian, all the rest of the days of my life. And Lame Deer, another holy man, says, I believe that being a medicine man more than anything else is a state of mind, a way of looking at and understanding this earth, a sense of what it is all about. Am I a Wichashawakan, a medicine man? I guess so. I want to be a Wichashawakan, a man who feels the grief of others. A death anywhere makes me feel poor. You can tell a good medicine man by his actions and his way of life. Is he lean? Does he live in a poor cabin? Does money leave him cold? Black Elk teaches us, as do all the old traditional Indian teachers, that we are related and dependent upon everything. He says, is not the sky a father and the earth a mother? And are not all living things with feet or wings or roots their children? And this earth, from whence we came, and at whose breast we suck as babies all our lives, along with all the animals and birds and trees and grasses. And that's something we have to think about, because some of us, especially if we get some money or we get educated or something, we become arrogant and we think we're self-sufficient. But we have to remember that all you have to do is to take a grown man, the most important man in the world, and cover up his nose and mouth so that he cannot breathe the air that comes from this Great Spirit. And he will begin to cry and sob like a baby and move his arms and legs just like a baby deprived of food. Because that man, no matter how arrogant, is like a suckling baby. He has an umbilical cord that connects him with the universe. He cannot break that cord. It can never be cut. We are all utterly and absolutely dependent upon the earth and the air and the water and all of these things every moment of our lives. We can lose our hands and we can live. We can lose our arms and we can live. We can lose our legs and our nose and our hair and many other things and we can still live. But if we lose the air, we die. If we lose the water, we die. If we lose the plants and animals, we die. If we lose the earth, we die. We are more dependent on these things, and they are more a part of us than those things that we call our body. And that is the way Indian people think, and that is the basis for Indian religion, that we, all living creatures, are one, and we are children of the same parents. Igjugashuk, an Eskimo doctor, holy man, tells us, true wisdom is to be found only far away from people, out in the great solitude, and is not found in play, but only through suffering. Solitude and suffering open the human mind, and therefore a doctor must seek his wisdom there. Now you will understand from that that traditional Indian people, when they set out to find knowledge and when they set out to find wisdom, do not go down a path that is an easy one. It's not a path that one can follow by going to powwows. It's not a path that one can follow by making arts and crafts. It's not a path that one can follow by learning how to dance. It's not a path that one can follow by seeking after money. It's not a path that one can follow by going to schools, because the schools these days do not teach us wisdom. Wisdom is our destiny, and if we do not achieve wisdom, we do not grow up as men and women. But it is very hard to achieve. Don Juan Matus, a Yaqui holy man, teaches us how important this path of knowledge is. He said to one of his students, I told you once that our lot as men is to learn, for good or bad. You should know by now that a man of knowledge lives by acting, not by thinking about acting, nor by thinking about what he will think when he has finished acting. A man of knowledge chooses a path with heart and follows it. He knows that his life will be over altogether too soon. Your friend, an old wealthy man, is lonely because he will die without seeing. In his life, he just grew old, and now he must have more self-pity than ever before. He feels he threw away 40 years because he was after victories and he found only defeats. He'll never know that to be victorious or to be defeated are equal. Our lot as men is to learn, and one goes to knowledge as one goes to war. And so you're afraid of the emptiness of your friend's life. But there's no emptiness in the life of a man of knowledge, I tell you. Everything is filled to the brim. I'm not like your friend who just grew old. For him, his struggle was not worth his while because he was defeated. For me, there is no victory or defeat or emptiness. Everything is filled to the brim and everything is equal, and my struggle was worth my while. You must learn to make every act count, since you are going to be here for only a short while. In fact, too short for witnessing all the marvels of it. You don't have time for a display of reluctance. Whatever you're doing now may be your last act on earth. It may very well be your last battle. There is no power which could guarantee that you're going to live one more minute. A man goes to knowledge as he goes to war, wide awake, with fear, with respect, and with absolute assurance. Going to knowledge or going to war in any other manner is a mistake, and whoever makes it will live to regret his steps. So going to knowledge is our destiny, but it is a hard path, because as we try to follow the roads of life, we find things to fool us and to lead us astray all along those roads. And as we look around and as we think of our brothers and sisters, as we think of our relatives, as we think of other people we know, and as we think of ourselves, we see so many disappointing lives. We see so many empty lives. We see so many people that are already dead by the time they're 25. We see so many people whose only life is the television set or the bar. We see so many people who cannot get by without drugs, whether it be alcohol or other kinds of drugs, whatever it may be. We see so many people who have absolutely meaningless lives, and yet at any moment they have the power to completely change that life. Because as Wong tells us, you are that way because you tell yourself that you are that way. But it's hard to find that path. And one of the things the old Indian people tell us is this: to be a warrior, a man has to be, first of all, and rightfully so, keenly aware of his own death. And I don't want to dwell on death at this occasion, but I only want to say that it is your death that will be your teacher, because once you come to realize fully and completely inside that you are not going to live forever in this life, then you will know that you do not have time for television. You do not have time for liquor. You do not have time for all the petty kinds of things that people do. You have to get on that path, because your death is waiting, and it won't wait once it is due to come. Now, there are many things that the elders teach that I'm not going to have time to go into, but I want to stress a couple of things that are basic about Indian people that come out of this religious experience. Because you have to remember that for Indian people, religion is what we do 24/7.